I guess you're going to have to because I think she's dropped off.
Okay, no problem. So on the call we have Cheryl Langdonor, Jana Soninen, and
sorry for the interruption, Mr. Subic now joined.
Okay, great, thank you. And J. Scott Evans, our chair. Dr. Sabaya has just joined us. And for staff, we have Ken Bauer and Liz Gaster. Did I miss anybody? All right, it's all yours, J. Scott.
Well, I mean, I think we just need to start. Let's bring everybody up to date, Ken, of where we were.
Okay.
And I'm just going to leave it to you because you were driving the pen. The last meeting we had was an in-person meeting. It was myself, Ken, Graham Chenoweth, and I'm sorry I'm not going to be able to remember Johan's last name, but we all met in person. We worked through, I think, the first three paragraphs.
Well, we went through all of sections 2 and 3.
Okay. So now we're on section 4.
Right. So what I would suggest, just to do real quick, I'm not sure if everybody noticed, but the wiki has been updated based on the work that was done in Sydney. And so all of section 2 now is completed. I think we had actually done section 2.1 on a prior call, but all the rest of it, 2.2, team member roles and responsibilities, 2.3, use of subteams, and the whole section on 3.0, which had to do with norms, 3.1, 3.2, all of that material has been gone over again. All of the notes have been eliminated, and just outline sections now remain. I think we don't have maybe just one remaining note that I stuck in there when I was going through it. I was unsure about something. In fact, that might be a good place to start. If you look at section 3.4 consensus, what we have left in the outline, there was an item that I wasn't sure what to do with, folks, and you'll notice the note there. It says, I'm not sure about recording of consensus calls. The original subteam, the one that worked on this particular outline, included the following instruction, quote, at the chair's direction, working group participants must be explicitly associated with each view / position, end quote. And I'm not really sure what happened during our Sydney discussion, but somehow I didn't have a note attached to that item. Is it common in working groups for recording of positions? I understand minority positions, but if there's a consensus call, does everybody say, I'm in, I'm not in, or I agree, I don't agree? If somebody could clarify that, then I can fix that particular item in the notes.
This is Jay Scott. In my experience, it really depends on how the chair calls for consensus. I've seen a chair call for consensus where everybody's opts in, and then I've seen call for consensus where it's, we're making a call for consensus, only those people who are going to opt out reply.
But what recording, what would the minute taker record as it was? For example, if you called for a consensus and you had a listening of eyes or a show of hands or whatever it was that allowed you to conclude that you had consensus, what gets recorded?
Again, it was always at the chair's discretion. Either it was, a call for consensus was saved, having no objections, there was consensus was deemed reached, or it was XYZ, or I've seen them poll the group.
Right, I guess I'm still not being clear. Would each working group participant's name be associated with their position? That's the question.
Well, I guess it depends on what the chair asked for. If they asked for the group to be polled, yes.
Okay. Can I remember this, Subaya, here. I recall that, I mean, the guideline that was given to us from the board's direction mentioned basically only two instances where working groups have been attempted, more or less in this style, at ICANN. One was the IDN policy group, and that was another one. Now, I remember that on the other one, in the IDN policy group, we went absolute systematic, where on every view we had everyone's position. We had the minority views all duly recorded, but we didn't have this breakdown. But there was another, at the same time, there's this other, the other kind of associated working group that was going on, where they actually did this systematically. At the end of it, at the end of the working group, you know, maybe there were 10 calls or whatever. At the end of it, they posted on every single issue that they had a big matrix with who attended, as well as who took what position in each you know, decision that was required. It was like a big complicated matrix, but somebody had bothered to do that. You know, that's just what
I know. So would it be okay, guys, if we did this on that subject? I'll remove the note and simply change this language to say, at the chair's direction, working group participants may be associated explicitly with each view position, since it sounds like the chair gets to decide, right?
That's fine with me.
Yeah.
I'd be inclined to, you know, think of it as something that the group could decide. The chair may have to ultimately call the question if people view it differently. I think it makes sense to have the flexibility to record individuals if needed, or if the issues are sufficiently complex or nuanced where you'd want to differentiate where people stood. But I think it's also okay in the spirit of consensus not to push that in the absence of a need, because I think it could potentially polarize viewpoints where that's not necessary. I do want to point out that we've been using working groups quite a bit. It's not just the two that Sabaya mentions. Those were probably the first instances of it.
Right.
But they're very frequently used today. Typically, it's not an issue in the sense, if there is consensus, it's just, you know, it's the consensus or if there is a minority, they record the minority. I don't think typically in working groups it's found to be necessary. But I agree that there could be instances where it would be more than, you know, very useful to do. So I do kind of think it should be optional and not required, and that there could be instances where it's actually not a good idea.
Yeah, this is John. I do agree with that. I think that we should avoid too much process and not at least have in every instance that has to be recorded. I think most of the times just that consensus was there is enough, so the matter of fact that there was a decision is enough, and this is in very rare occasions where explicit kind of standing should be recorded, but maybe having that possibility is useful.
Okay, I think I've captured some notes here. I'm actually editing the wiki as we go along here, so I'll capture that. Good. That helped me with that one, and so I would suggest that we slide on down to Section 4, Logistics and Requirements.
Just before you do, I think it's important when you're rewording, I haven't refreshed, perhaps you've already done it, just to capture that it is as much, whilst the chair goes through the process, an individual or a subset of individuals in a working team needs to be able to have their name recorded against something, even though they may not be putting up a minority view per se. Their minority view may not be a formed document, but simply a statement that says, we or me want my name or our names recorded against this outcome.
I also wanted to add something to Bayer. I have no issue with the notion of you know, when needed, having it be explicit and more explicit, and when not so needed, that's fine. Just leave it as consensus. But my concern is that, can anyone point out what would happen if that is in conjunction? That happens in conjunction with 3.5, minimum representation at a meeting. The first point says, since working groups are intended to operate on a consensus model versus voting, there are generally no circumstances when a quorum should be defined and imposed. So if there is no quorum and there's just, you know, no defined or imposed in the circumstance where there's just one or two people out of a very large group of people who are nominally on the committee or the working group, if there's very few people at the meeting and also we are not recording, you know, we've chosen to not record explicitly on, you know, what everyone says, then is it possible, am I understanding, that the current document allows an instance where there could be maybe 15 people on the committee, or and then at some meeting, two people or three people there, make a decision, and it's called a consensus, and it just moves on without a revisitation?
This is Ken. We included something at the bottom in the next paragraph, 3.5, called minimum representation at a meeting.
Yeah, that's what I'm reading from the first section.
Yeah.
Generally, a call for consensus should be to the whole group.
Yeah.
Not to any subgroup that shows up at a call.
Okay.
So if a group got together at a call and they worked on this document,
right,
and this group came to an agreement on what this document should be, then it would have to go out to the whole group for a call for consensus.
Okay. All right. I mean, that would be certainly very reasonable. But I'm just hoping that the document itself, you know, right now this section captures that idea. I am just not, I haven't looked at it very
carefully. Yeah, I think I agree. I don't know if we had it somewhere, but maybe that on the decision making, we should just say where the decision making should take place. So, for instance, in IETF, it's only the working group mailing list that's allowed to do decisions because that's seen as the representation of the whole group. Whereas in some other organizations like 3GPP, it's the meeting that just can do the decisions, and the mailing list is something extraordinary. So we should do that decision where we can, where do we want to do the decisions. And from Jake Scott's comment that we should do the decisions with the whole group and not of a subset of a group that happens to be in the meeting, that would indicate to the direction of having the decisions done on the mailing list.
I'm trying to capture that, yeah.
Yeah, and Liz, correct me if I'm wrong, that's how we've done the PPSC. I mean, even when we've had a call where the majority of the people on the call are of like mind, we still send it out to the group.
Right, and at the council level, too, they tend to they'll hold something over if there isn't a big, and in other working groups, if there isn't large representation, or even if there is, just to allow, sort of type it in, put it in quotes or in the highlights, and then give it another session at least for everyone to have a chance to review at the next meeting.
The other thing is that we might want to write down what is the time given to, the general time given to a decision, so if that would be a week or something like that. But one thing that just to keep in mind, we don't want to cripple the process by saying that every decision have to be made in mailing list, so maybe, because that is also a thing kind of like that if everything that even resembles a decision can only be done on the mailing list, you would have after every meeting about what 20 decisions to be done during the next week.
Okay, this is Ken. I've recorded a couple of notes. One in the consensus section that said consensus call should always involve the entire working group. And then in 3.5, I added another bullet, which I thought we did have it. I must have missed it somehow. But the idea is decisions made by subgroups should always be shared with a larger team. I seem to recall that being discussed in Sydney, but it doesn't appear here, so I added it.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think that this here was not about that the decision should be shared, but the kind of, or the information should be shared, but the decision should be made always by the bigger team. I think that was what Jay Scott said, but maybe Jay Scott can speak for himself.
No, I think that it should be shared, Ken, and on that bullet, and I would just, you know, you can make a cross-reference back up, and any consensus call should entire, you know, just reiterate it again.
Okay.
So you say any subgroup decision needs to be shared with a larger group, and any call for consensus on any decision made by a subgroup needs to be made to the larger group, or and then refer back up.
Okay.
Okay, we're at 4.0.
Yes, sir. So this first bullet was to deal with session, just session planning. General meeting logistics was the first bullet. and then we had some comments. And so the general idea here is to decide what stays in the outline and what comments we want to keep and what comments we want to delete.
Who's TR?
Thomas Russler, I believe. Well, would it be helpful for me to read these comments or something?
I'm reading them as...
Okay.
Is everybody on the wiki?
Yes.
I even printed myself the wiki text.
Oh, it's printed the wiki.
It's possible.
I understand it's possible. I'm just wondering how you're doing the updating.
Well, I've got the pen.
Ken has the pen. I don't want to mix up the system.
I mean, some of the comments, you know, seem to be I'm not so sure they both. I mean, I get Thomas's point on teleconference medium and, you know, personally, I think Adobe's Connect is the better environment, but I don't think we should, you know, loop anybody in. I think we should...
Oh, I can't handle it.
Well, my recommendation would be to delete the first comment, which...
I'm going to have to dial back in. I don't know what's happened.
Okay. Just sort of following our general plan in Sydney, I recommend that we delete the first comment unless anybody has an objection or thinks that there's some point there that we need to capture.
No. I do think that maybe you can take that comment and somehow get it into medium of teleconference service, that thing, and say that, you know, once you select one for the group, it should remain consistent.
Or another question is, do we have kind of a standardized ICANN working environment, which means basically this, the ICANN, whatever teleconference media operator they use and whatever online meeting tool they use, and just refer that, well, those are used unless explicitly kind of otherwise decided.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to go. Liz, because you all do sort of have a standardized...
Well, let me say this. I would not name a brand of product because that can always change. But I do think that it's useful for this group that is looking at, you know, standards and consistency across working groups and what works to describe what you think is optimal or beneficial, because what we've been doing to date is more experimental than defined. And it's grown up in an ad hoc way based on people's experiences and what works. For example, the Adobe Connect was something that I believe the ALAC really embraced first, and you know, we found it useful too. And which isn't to say that, you know, I guess the point is, it's the job of this group to help define what's really useful, and I wouldn't worry about the names of tools, but I would think it's appropriate to describe the kinds of tools that should be used consistently or optionally at the direction of the group. You know, if you're at a nascent stage where you're not looking at a document, it may be premature to use Adobe, but if people find it useful because there's so many participants and you want to manage the call using the tool, I think that kind of discretion should be available. So I wouldn't worry about what's been done in the past or defining something that has to always be used, but I do think it's appropriate to mention and categorize the kinds of things that you think should be institutionalized or at least available as a menu for the team to select from.
Okay.
Yeah. So this, Yona, I would like to say that, for instance, we could put something there that they kind of like that we use the ICANN provided teleconference and kind of like electronic meeting service as defined, or something similar. But then as requirements, there should be that it's available for the, that it's generally available without a license for the user and kind of like works in most operating systems if we want, that we don't have situations like somebody wants to use HP Halo, which one of those rooms costs, what, $1 million or something like that, or $500,000, and not everybody has one, so that the tools don't become kind of the deciding factor of who can join the meeting. But I agree that we shouldn't name any names of, because those can change, but I think that, is this a right assumption that ICANN is working towards having a staff-supported kind of standardized quote-unquote, so an ICANN-prepared online meeting system, so teleconference plus something like Adobe Connect?
It's the intent to offer it like we are today and to enhance tools as they become available, but specific guidance on what would work best is welcome.
Yeah, so I think what we need to do is we, rather than name systems, talk about characteristics.
Mm.
So one of the things we know is that the preferred teleconference service is ICANN. And
yeah.
It needs to have the ability to record the call, correct, in an MP3 format.
Yeah.
It also, it needs to be of no additional cost to participants.
Yeah.
I think for the teleconference, that's about the minimums, right? It needs to be, I guess we would say generally available, of little or no cost to participants, and a ability to record MP3 format of the call. So those are three minimums. Then
yep.
We would say, additionally, there needs to be the availability of an online tool, such as Adobe Connect. For example, and then just let's give the qualities about an online tool we want. The ability to post and edit documents in real time. The ability to communicate in chat in real time. The ability to manage the call votes and discussion queues, because those are all the things about Adobe that I find extremely valuable.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, you see what I'm saying, Ken? Just broad minimum qualities that any tool should have.
Yeah, I've been jotting notes in this section as you've been talking through them, and I'll reorganize them after I get.
I mean, what you're just doing is saying, to somebody, when you look at a tool or something, if you're not going to use ICANN, you've got to at least have this, because it makes it more manageable for the group.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think you need to add again in the online tool that it's no cost to the participant,
right,
and it is easily available and easily, I don't know how to say it, interoperable, or it works on most standard computers, something to that extent.
Yeah.
So you're basically saying you can't pick something that people have to go and download $10,000 worth of software on their computer.
Yeah, and it works only on some special configuration or something like that. So basically it has to support most modern operating systems in the bounds of reason and kind of like
right.
Be useful tool and stuff like that.
Yeah. And then the next bullet, so I think those are with regards to the technology, Ken. Do you think you've got enough there to sort of...
I do. Yeah, I think we're good there on the medium.
Jay Scott, Cheryl here. Just on the tool, if it may not be an essential, but some tools have easier archive and replay or record. Others don't. If you're doing a lot of work using these online tools, it really is handy, particularly if you've got subgroups working, if at people's own leisure you can log in and look at what's happened during a sub-team activity. I would think that's a fairly desirable trait.
Yeah, I'll slash recording with archiving, so we'll have both of those thoughts there.
Okay. Now we've got Aubrey's comment. I agree except that innovation should be allowed, and I think that can come out because we've done that by just saying you've got to have these minimums. And so if it's got more than that, more bells and whistles, that's fine.
Okay.
All right. Times, I think reasonable selection. I think UTC is good, but I think there needs to be a comment there about rotation.
Time zone. Do you feel that's useful?
So that there should be an effort to make a fair and balanced rotation of times. Does anyone disagree? But I mean, it needs to sort of, the pain needs to be even.
This Shubaya, I will happily vote for that.
Yeah, I've added that.
I think the thing on length and duration is 2 hours maximum, I think, is pretty reasonable. What do other people think? As a suggestion, you know, I think 2 hours is pretty much at the...
I think that maybe this is the way we could leave it, G. Scott, is to say 2 hours is the default unless the group itself, no one objects and people decide it's important and go longer or something.
I mean, it would be a suggested best practice that no more than 2 hours unless the entire group... unless there's consensus that the call needs to be longer.
Okay. I think when I write this section, I'll flesh that out. But I think it's okay as for now. Yeah, the idea here is we just want the working group to think a little bit about the kinds of calls it's going to have and what lengths and durations are typically going to work for the group. And so, this expectation of no more than 2 hours might be what they would choose, but they might say no more than 1 hour. I mean, that's also possible, right?
That's true.
Yeah, okay. And the same thing on frequency. I mean, they should pick a frequency or variable, however they want to do it.
That's correct.
Yeah. It's more a matter, I think there's two points where these are extremely important pieces of data, these sorts of metrics. One is when people are in fact deciding to join, not to join, or to commit or not to commit, how much of a commitment they're going to be making. But you do need to leave the group plenty of individual group choice, because there'll be times where you will want to meet several times a week to finish something important off, but only for shorter blocks of time.
Sure.
And I, with all this, maybe we should put some sort of chapeau language that just says, flexibility, innovation is encouraged, however, at a minimum, these are the minimums, and then do this stuff.
Yeah, we'll have something at the very top in both of the documents that says, nothing in any of this material should be considered a hard and fast rule unless it's really stated that way. And
right.
Otherwise, it's all, it's just guidelines.
So, Jay Scott, come to your sharing of the pain. Whilst, believe me, I understand the principle, certainly the experience in the at-large advisory committee, not so much their work groups, is that they require to agree on a single point and time so that the volunteers can better manage their lives. They all know that at a given day, at a given time, and a given amount of time is going to be a commitment from them for the overall meeting. So sometimes the group itself might prefer not to share the pain around, but say this is the time it's going to be.
Well, and I think that can be stated. It can be, again, I mean,
it's to meet the needs of the group that's needing.
Right. Ken, I see you have a comment here, and I agree. It would seem to me that that should be in the charter. Duration of the work team.
Right. Mm. Yeah, I was making that comment because, in fact, I know that it is over there in the charter guidelines. But if for some reason it wasn't in the charter,
I think you should also address it. I don't think they can meet that timeline. Right? There are two situations. One, it's not addressed, and it should have been. And two is, when they get into the work, they realize they're not going to meet the deadline.
Mm.
And in both of those situations, they need to go back to their sponsoring organization, correct?
Right. Yeah.
So I just think we should cover both of those situations.
Okay. I'm trying to think how here. So in the duration schedule, what I should probably just write there is this will normally be covered in the charter, right?
Right.
So we won't. I'll take the 6 months, 12 months out and say.
Yeah.
Yeah, this normally the duration will be contained in the charter. However, if it does not make sense, then if not, then the working group should.
One of its first orders of business.
Yeah, should communicate with the sponsor.
Likewise, if the working group should determine it will be unable to meet the timeline set forth in the charters, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that's covered somewhere down.
Can we just note it, and if it is, we'll let it go.
Yeah, okay, we'll do. That's a good idea. Hang on, let me just flip back to where I was. Yes, okay, and...
Because I'm thinking of a couple of experiences here in the Australian telco industry where the regulator and government have required a particularly desired endpoint or timeline. And when, you know, the work groups have got right down to it, it's simply unable to be done. What's important is early, in a timely manner, getting back to, in this case, the regulator, but in the model we're looking at, the sponsoring organisation, there perhaps should be some trigger points where a report back at various milestone or phases is, I'll use the term mandatory, but desirable, even if the report back is, we're on track, thank you very much. Just so things don't become a surprise at the end.
Yeah, so it's the kind of like idea basically that every working group should have a kind of like up-to-date work plan with clear milestones when they report back. And that's, of course, true.
Okay, I've captured that, both those points.
And occasionally, what we've done in the CCTLD environment here in Australia, where all policy, in fact, is formulated by policy work groups, which then come back up to the board for the board to either accept or say, can you go back and try that again? The work groups themselves need to know that occasionally, in this case, the sponsoring organisation is the equivalent to the board of AUDA, can say, no, you're going to have to put another 2 or 3 months on that because you're still not meeting the needs as we envisaged. So even though there's a clear separation from where the policy is developed as such, it can be sent back to the work group and, in some cases, even double the original timeline.
Okay, Ken, what is your comment with regards to agenda?
I don't remember what I was thinking at that time. I'm prepared to delete that comment quickly. You know, I think it's sufficient here under session planning that we just deal with the subject or topic of agenda I think I think some of that comment came from Thomas. Somewhere in an email, I think he wrote some information about that, and that's maybe where I came from. But and then I guess Aubrey's comment was dealing with mine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're fine on that, right? We're going to provide some comments at the very outset of the document that says, keep in mind that flexibility and good judgment will always be preferable to anything written in these guidelines. All right, so we can take that out, and so we're down to
in it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know, of course, we've already suggested that they use a teleconference service that has the ability to record MP3 recording, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this would have to do with in-person meetings where there's not an ICANN assigned transcriber, correct?
Yeah, or it's I think even when we had when we had recordings but not transcriptions, it was either me or one of the staff members, you know, would try to summarize. I always called my summary and action meeting notes, you know.
Okay.
Summary and meeting notes and action items, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, so, Vision, I think also that we need some sort of meeting minutes, not only transcriptions or MP3s, because those are, like going through MP3s, that will take you quite some time, but really something that summarizes excuse me, what was decided and what will be done next, who was present in the meeting and things like that, just as kind of a meeting report, so what was done in the meeting.
Liz, can I jump in on that? One thing I want the group to think about is, so one challenge that we're having in working groups right now is that we have many more working groups running at the moment than we've typically had, let's just say, in GNSO-related work historically. So right now, GNSO-related working groups, I think we have close to 13 different working groups, maybe 15. And so my point is really that staff is pretty burdened by trying to do, first of all, the transcripts and the recordings, those are kind of standardized today. And there is staff work associated with arranging for the recording, posting the recording, and on the transcript, reviewing the transcript and posting it. But they are less burdensome than, and we tend to do action items, the most minimal action items anyway. But I am concerned about scaling written minutes across 13 or 15 working groups, and I believe that we need to think about this a little bit holistically, because there is quite a burden here that typically, when I use transcripts, I find it very quick, actually, to run through a transcript as long as it's written and find what I need. I think we really need to be sure about what we're asking for here and what kind of staff requirements then have to get.
I think that what we should say is that, you know, I think that what Ken has pointed out, everyone's pointed out, a summary and action items is the level of detail that needs to be provided. I think that, you know, we need to put down a guideline that you shouldn't assume that staff is going to be responsible, and that at the a point ascribed for each call that will be, you know, and then what do you think? Others? I mean,
well,
I'm in INTA, we appoint a scribe, and it kind of rotates around.
Yeah, so I think that maybe the bigger or more important working groups can have staff support for as a scribe. But in general, I think that a volunteer scribe or appointed scribe, whichever, or somehow somebody made to write down the action items and decisions, that's just fine. It doesn't have to be staff support always. I would imagine that maybe the more important things or bigger working groups could have even staff support or kind of so quote-unquote professional secretary or scribe for the meeting. But most of them most probably have just somebody from the group who's writing down that what was decided.
And I think, Ken, one of the things we need to do is put a guide that, you know, it should be circulated to the broader group that was in attendance for approval prior to being posted to the public. That's typically what we do. Does that seem problematic?
I think that's a good, right approach. I'm like, the minutes have to be kind of maybe a week time or 2 days or some time, basically, that the group will silently consent to the contents of those minutes. If there is no objection, then they are approved to kind of implicitly.
Good, Liz. I think that's a good thought, and you know, we might want to try it in this group a little bit and see how it works, and see what kinds of contours we might want to apply. I think also we might want to talk a little bit about how you would differentiate. I know you were using shorthand to say, you know, one working group's more important than another, but, you know, what the characteristics should be to help differentiate when a participant might be named versus when staff support is requested.
So I think that should come from the sponsoring organization, that if they kind of like the resources that during the chartering of the working group, if there is something that is fairly small and maybe not so long in duration, it doesn't necessarily need staff support, that much staff support, than something that is more, let's say, difficult or where you really need an impartial scribe there and so on, or people are not willing for some other reason to take that role because they are needed in the discussion more. I think that comes a little bit, depends on case by case. I don't think that there's a general rule. I just use this kind of like saying more important, but it depends on kind of like what is seen as the need of the group or resources from the staff in general.
Yeah, so that would make sense maybe to add to the charter, have it be specific to a working group that is addressed in the charter. And there might even be other elements that would make it more relevant to have a scribe. For example, if a group divided into three smaller groups, let's just say, or two smaller groups, it might be useful because there'll be importance to having that detail available for the three subgroups. Or, you know, there might be additional rationale for when that makes sense.
Yeah, or the thing is, I understand your point totally that, well, there are so many scribes or staff support that the staff can get. If we end up having 60 working groups, not everybody is going to have a scribe, and especially if they have sub-working groups and stuff like that, just going, like, extreme here. So I think that should be understandable for everybody, that there are groups that are going to get the support and there are groups that are not.
But if you've got tools, depending on the tool you're using, you can have some standardization or some templating, in inverted commas, of how things are recorded. My concern about a scribe being allocated from the group in rotation is the variety of capture with more or less detail, and it's usually the more detail that I find problematic rather than the less detail in these circumstances. If we're using tools like wikis, where a scribe for a subgroup of a work group can look at what is expected, then they're more likely to, first of all, say, yes, I can do that job of scribing for this subgroup, and secondly, do it in a way which fits with what is currently best practice. But occasionally, when you switch secretariats, for example, you've got to retrain the minute taker because the minutes, you know, resemble some sort of major piece of novel work as opposed to what the group has been working with. Just conventions such as using initials or not you can waste an awful lot of time retraining the scribes to get them back to a standardized convention. If we're using templates, that makes it a lot easier as well.
This is Ken, just a comment. So I've been trying to capture ideas that get mentioned here. Just once again, my sense of this document is what we're trying to do is to get the working group to consider a number of things. So I've retitled this section. I took the word minutes out and called it meeting notes. If they want to do minutes, I suppose they could, but what we would be suggesting in the guidelines is that the working group should define what level of notes it needs, how detailed or verbose they should be, how often they should be posted, or when they, you know, that sort of all. It's all we want to do, I think, in our book is to give them all of the questions that they need to think about and decide on, rather than tell them that, you know, they should only appoint scribes that are staffs or not staff. Or I mean, they can figure all that out, right?
I think they're going to have to.
Yeah, but we don't. Our guidebook isn't trying to prescribe answers to those questions, right? Just to raise the questions.
Right. I think it should somehow point out they shouldn't assume that they're going to have staff. In the event they don't have staff to do that role, how are they going to handle it?
Right.
And that at a minimum, you know, I think we need to say at a minimum they need to have meeting summaries and action items.
Okay, so on sub-point one that Thomas entered, I will add, I left the first point in and changed the second one. So the first one says action items. Why don't we say summary and action items / resolutions, I guess,
mm-hmm.
should be available within 1 to 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need, however, rough the form?
No.
Okay. And then the second one I put, meeting notes should be circulated to the entire group within XX period after the session. And again, are we going to recommend how frequently, or that they should make that decision when they're after they've convened?
Well, can we set a minimum, or, you know, say within...
No later than 1 week after the session?
1 week or 10 days or something like that.
Yeah, I think that there should be some kind of timeline which says that when they are delivered and what time you have to...
I mean, it should be cool enough that they could be quicker
to comment on them
from an outside date.
We could say something like meeting notes should be circulated to the entire group on a timely basis, but no later than 1 or 2 days before the next session. I mean, if the group's meeting weekly, then to say no later than 1 week after the session isn't very helpful, right? So maybe just to say on a timely basis, but no later, but before the next meeting. So what I wrote is a meeting note should be circulated to the entire group on a timely basis, but at least 1 day before its next session.
Okay.
We can wordsmith that later. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, then Thomas has a note. The documentation stuff, in my mind, goes to the same category as setting up communication, staff responsibility. Does anybody have any comments on that? Should I just delete that comment?
Again, it's not staff's responsibility. It's the working group's responsibility, so yeah.
Yeah, I think Thomas has a different point of view on that, but we've discussed it in...
Well, it's not going to scale if we throw everything on staff unless they're going to hire 200 people in the next week. So we just need to take it out.
Okay. Done.
I thought I heard somebody speaking up, Cheryl or Liz. It sounded like a female voice.
Not guilty for once.
Okay.
And me either, but I will comment, which is only to say that I think it would be a good idea to just, because Thomas isn't on the call, we can delete it, but also perhaps make a note in the minutes or in the wiki that we've discussed it, and
okay.
So he can follow the bouncing ball.
Well, just a point of order there. we did a lot of that sort of thing on the in Sydney. And I did not make an attempt to try to say whose note it was, why it got clobbered, or any of that.
Well, it's just that
Thomas wrote the comment. He knows the comment. He can compare versions if he wants. We'll have kept that information. you know, we sort of discussed in Sydney that if you're not on the call, those that are on the call can sort of make the decision. And we will resubmit, of course, the new outline, right, with those comments will be out.
Yeah, so I think that Ken is right. Let's just go ahead, and Thomas will take care of his own comments. This is nothing against Thomas. This is just a point of order in the kind of like when we're drafting something, yes, we will most probably throw a couple of babies with the bathwater, but people hopefully take care of their own babies and bring them back if they were important.
So maybe the way to compromise on this, Ken, is just to put out an email in the next summary or whatever that you'd be putting out, just to say that, you know, points were considered in general and things were removed and things were added, that people would just go through their own versions to make sure that their points got addressed.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'd be happy to do that. Okay, let's see. The next one said draft schedule for whole working group duration post and fairly. What does that mean?
It looks like it's some sort of draft timeline for the entire working group duration.
Charter again.
Yeah, I think so. I don't really know. I don't know where that item came from. So I'd be inclined to delete that.
Right.
Okay. The next note was a note from me. It's just whether this topic is important to have its own subchapter. All right. Well, we probably don't need a subchapter because we just discussed that stuff's going in the charter. All right. So we're down to 4.2.
Communication.
I'm going to hit the save button real quick, just so.
Oh, good. We'll all reload now to see what you have done.
Well, that's right. You can do that. That's a good point. All right. So we're down to 4.2. Okay. This has to do with working group communications.
Yeah.
Mailing lists.
Mailing lists should all be public. I mean, there are always going to be private communications between parties on a group, but the mailing list.
The mailing list should be public and they should be archived. I agree.
Yep.
All right, let me take private out. Public and archived. Some of these rules got added by some members of the sub-team, like limits around pages and attachment sizes, define sufficient
well,
lead time.
Again, I think we should look at the 3 points and not see them as separate items. The mailing list to me is simply another form of collaboration tool. There's been some God-given ranking to it, at least in the group within ICANN that I have most exposure to, that a mailing list is somehow a prioritised decision-making tool. It is a collaboration tool, nothing more, nothing less. And not all cultures are comfortable using all collaboration tools equally. And not one should be a higher priority over the other.
I'm happy to pick up mailing lists and drop it underneath collaboration tools.
Because then if you're using wikis and those types of other collaboration tools, I'd be worrying about why people are putting huge attachments onto mailing lists at all. They should be being attached to one of the other But mailing lists should not, you know, have large size and download requirements. There's some places, for example, where people are into Africa, you know, they're relying on mobile communication requirements, and, you know, just getting the header of the mailing list is all they're going to be doing, and then going to the wiki and not downloading anything, but simply accessing it remotely.
Well, I think that that's all well and good, but I got to tell you, then somewhere in here we need to have some sort of educational time for folks during the establishment of a working group where they get some training on how to use these tools.
Including the mailing lists with things like how not to attach huge files.
I mean, maybe that's one of the, I don't know, but, you know,
that's...
But, I mean, people say, well, we have a wiki and blah, 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 and use it, enjoy, and it's not that easy if you're not familiar with
it. I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's hugely important.
So, I mean, communications, maybe we just need to say, you know, there are a variety communications and list them and then put down, you know, if you're going to use a mailing list, it needs to be public and it needs to be archived.
Yeah.
Collaboration tools such as wikis, you know, blah, blah, and just put some general guidelines.
Well, what you did earlier with the forms of collaboration tools, you put in some, you know, some minimum requirements, some best practice. The same thing should go for the mailing list.
Okay. I'll just make a note to myself there.
And again, we don't need to be using proprietal names.
Okay.
And I do believe that we do need to say that somewhere that make Cheryl's point that, you know, if you're using a variety of methods, then any notice needs to go to all those methods. So if you're using a mailing list and a wiki and you're noticing something, or it should go to both places.
Yep.
All right. So my comment there, right below the first bullet, which is now not the first bullet, suggested changing the title to communication tools to differentiate it from behavior. Anybody object to that?
No.
I think that's
what we're looking for here, right? So.
Yeah.
So I'm going to...
Well, I think 4.3 may handle my point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just noticed that, looking ahead.
but that dry run, that ability to have an upfront training, I discovered, for example, when I first started with a particularly new group, well, new to me, not new to Australia, and they are a passionate following of the open source world, I couldn't use the Moodle tool because my laptop didn't have OpenOffice on it. So it basically forced me to go and download OpenOffice before I could use the collaboration tool. Now, I don't have a problem doing that, but it needs to be something that you know about before you do your first work meeting. It's something that you can discover during a training opportunity.
Yeah, and I think also that there shouldn't be, so I mean, like a practical point, there shouldn't be like a huge list of different tools used in different places, because those of us who have to live in a corporate environment, some of us have issues of installing stuff on our laptops, because we have to go through our IT people and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And when you have something exotic, they're just going to say no.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, that's a perfect example, you know. If I had to go and ask someone's permission to download OpenOffice...
Well, then, I think that should be a point under communications tools that we reiterate that, you know, we try to use things...
And that's where, and that's very much where the whole working in the cloud is better, because, it, you know... puts the pressure away from the edges. You just need to access. And again, I keep thinking about the need for people to often be using mobile communications, not even a laptop in some of the regions.
Okay, I tried to capture that under what I've now got as a fourth bullet, which I sort of called rules or guidelines associated with communications. For example, email page limits or attachment sizes, define sufficient lead time for people to read, respond, utilize common software applications, avoid requiring any downloadable applets to client computers, that sort of thing.
Hmm. Yeah.
So when that gets written up, that'll just,
yeah,
that'll be a category that says, when you're looking at communication and collaboration tools, these are some things to think about.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And,
Are we okay to move to 4.3?
Yeah.
All right.
I might have to step away for a minute. I'll be right back.
Okay. Upfront determine training needs and modify by first. I'm not sure whose note this is. Let's see.
I'm looking at the three points there of Thomas, and then you, and then Thomas, right? It boils down to basically the comments seem to be, you know, that the training process, whatever's been set up, what has been decided, the issue of who decides it. Should it be the group, or should it be something higher up, the charter sponsoring association, the group? You know, that's one of the two things that, and the second thing is there should be a clear cutoff timeline that once you've set up some training week or 2 weeks or whatever it is you've set up, it should be held accountable, and people shouldn't just keep asking for more training and training as a way of stalling everything. Okay, I think, am I right? Those are basically the two points here, right?
Right.
Okay, so I think one natural suggestion that was already implicit in the comments here is that, you know, that the charter, the group that is sponsoring the charter should be the first person who should make up whether what training is needed or what not. Now, in the event that they don't do it, or if the working group itself decides there's some additional training they need or something, then they may have the opportunity to discuss what they need. So that solves part of the problem already, because you've shifted it up to the level above that they have to decide if you need something. And then only if you need something more, then you start talking about it potentially. Okay? I think clearly that's probably fine. Now, then, if that's the case, then all we need to deal with here is in the event that the group itself decides they need additional training, then how to get it done, how to get it decided, and how to get it accountable so it's finished in a certain amount of time. Is that pretty much it? If we took care of that, then
Except for Avery's point, which is that it's a third concept, which says, and I think Thomas says the same thing, somebody has to be in a position to say no. And they come. Each one of them makes a point slightly differently.
Okay.
Avery, from the point of view that...
I see.
Yeah, people want, she says, a huge political component in training.
Okay.
I'm not really sure what she's referring to.
Well, there's two ways to stop it. Okay, one would be to say, well... you may have to ask your higher body whether that's allowable. Or secondly, you could stop it by simply putting language in here as minimum guideline things, where you say, look, no matter how much training you need, it has to be done by X period of time, you know, it cannot take longer than that, you know, so there's no way that the time factor can be the stalling issue. It's a minimum guideline put in here. Right, those are the only two ways of I can't see of anything else that could you know, other than saying the chair decides or something.
I would like to think that what is standard is the opportunity for training on the tools the group is going to use, before the group starts its actual work. Now, that may not be a mandatory requirement for all the work group members, because some of those work group members might be highly experienced users of those tools. But it allows the novice or the new work group member to have an ability to hit the ground running, I suppose.
And I think that one thing that should be kind of like also kind of focus here on the training, that the training should be focused on something that is related to the working group process, not maybe the technical or political or law-related knowledge that is needed to participate in the working group. That is something that people are expected to acquire themselves or use some other
kind of, or are bringing to the work group because that's their particular reason for being there.
Yeah, but I mean, like, things like that there is some kind of, like, maybe training is too big a word, but there is some kind of, like, learning resources to, for instance, to learn to use the tools, and perhaps some training or resources to understand how a working group works, which might be just these two documents. But I think that training on anything else beyond that, it's like Avery says, becomes political. And I think what Avery is basically pointing here to is that if you have, for instance, if you have technical training or training about a subject matter, there is always about the subject matter more kind of opinions. And one opinion might be very important for somebody and their business and their politics and whatever.
Yep.
And some other opinion for somebody else. So, which is, what are you going to teach there? And that would become too difficult, I think.
May I understand where that's coming from? I understand that it's a problem. I mean, there could be a huge political component to it. But here's the other side of the story. I don't know what the answer is, but the other side of the story is ICANN is a very complicated place, and so if a lot of these things tend to be technical. You know, and so we have a committee on technical stuff, and then you have people. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I think we're shifting to a working group, because I think previously the model was more where the GNSO Council elected members decided things, but often on things that they didn't really have that much expertise on, because you're selected to be in these committees for a variety of reasons, business reasons, political reasons, and so on and so forth, not necessarily technical reasons. So anyway, it's possible that in a working group level, which I have experienced, where people are making decisions on the outcome of some technology, ultimately. And many people are there to make voice their business opinions, their political views, their moral ideas, you know, whatever different aspects of that technology. However, many times technology decisions are then made where, you know, there's not even a minimum level of technological understanding by the group making the some members making that decision. Later on, you talk to them and say, "Well, we didn't know." I mean, they have you know, even the basics of that piece of technology. What does one do there? What's the solution? One solution might be to say, "Look, there could be a presentation or something by an SME, a subject matter expert, who would, you know, you could call that training if you like, but it's more just explaining the basics, or at least going through the basics, or putting up some documents to make sure that the people who are making decisions are at least minimally aware of the technology side of things, for instance.
Yeah, those briefing opportunities are often a good place for people to work out whether or not they're bringing a particular agenda into the work group that might be best left outside the work group door as well, because you're not necessarily making any form of furthering of the work group activity in such a briefing or listening to the subject matter expert, but you do get the temperature of everybody else's views. And that can be a very useful exercise in itself.
So where'd we end up? This is Jason.
Okay. I am trying to...
SMEs at the moment, but of course to me and anybody from China, for example, an SME is a small to micro enterprise. So,
All right, what I have got here is, so far under training is, to the extent that the charter does not identify and or prescribe, we'll wordsmith it later, specific training, and the working group determines that it needs additional education, for example, tools, processes, it should identify specific needs, comma, objectives, and costs. Is that reasonable?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And costs.
Well, I think that maybe it should be kind of like rather that there should be a kind of the minimum training material to use and operate the tools of ICANN and understand the processes of ICANN should be provided by the ICANN staff for everybody. And if people are expected to take the advantage of these kind of this information or resources before joining a working group so that they understand how working groups work and are able to master those tools. What I'm worried about when we say training, that sounds like formal classroom type of training or something formal like that. And I'm worried that people start to say, well, I don't know enough about the DNS, and I want a training solution for myself to learn about DNS, and and ICANN should provide that to me. Well, there are multiple free and also per pay solutions for that, and people can take those outside of ICANN. And those are what people are expected to do by themselves. And it's hard for ICANN as an organization or the staff, or even worse, the staff, to provide those kind of tools, I think.
Okay.
Getting back to those words and the usage that you were just pointing out, was the words like training, scheduling and training wrapped in with the subject matter expertise being shared, for the picking and choosing from? I would prefer terminology that's more talking about awareness raising and briefing rather than the formality of training. Even when it's coming from things like subject matter experts, which, for example, if you need to know about the ramifications in terms of security and stability that your decisions might be making, then, lesson number one, first work group would be a good idea to have available whatever briefings are archived that people can take themselves through, or have a DNS 5-minute promo that everyone gets the same exposure to.
May I give an example of what I thought in terms of briefing? I think we did a fairly good job as far as this committee itself is concerned, how it came about. Because when we started, one of the things we were all told is these are documents you have to read. This is the ICANN board, policy on what they wanted out of this committee, right? Some document, 230 pages. And then there was also PowerPoint presentations. I think somebody made it, at one of the meetings, going through the background of why this committees have been created, and some, explanation of background history and, just some information and some documents that we had to read. And in that process itself, I think that even if it's not, complete or, full-blown, the people who want to be part of this committee, who intend to be part of the business or whatever reason, are aware of what's there to be learned, at least, so that once they're finished with that, at least they realize that some parts they don't know, they can talk to other people in the committee and learn it along the way. I mean, and that would be helpful. And we did a reasonably good job on that. That's what I have in mind when I think in terms of so that people coming in, before they get into decision-making, have some knowledge of what they need to know, and more importantly, maybe know what they don't know, and have some idea of what, the stuff out there they don't know.
Why don't we just not call it training, call it informational briefings?
Yeah, I'm much more comfortable with that.
And then just list variety of subject matters, Ken, that you might cover, such as historical backgrounds, operations of work groups, technological tools, those kinds of things. And just give, you need to decide what you're going to do, but these are some suggestions. Lots of information briefly to consider.
So you want to retitle it? So I'm trying to make sure that we include. I understand that we don't want working groups to be asking for lots of training, right? And that's Thomas's point that I haven't deleted yet, but we've kind of captured. What I did was I changed that second or that first bullet to training/education/briefings. I don't know whether then the first bullet says to the extent that the charter does not specify and so forth, then identify specific needs, objectives, and I added in parens how it will impact the working group's objectives and costs if applicable. The next bullet would say, sub-bullet, any training must be approved by the sponsoring organization. Then I added a note. This training beyond tools or working group processes will generally not be approved. For example, general technical seminars. I know this isn't exactly what you guys are saying, but I'm trying to capture it.
Well, I think that there's been a strong consensus that the term training should come out.
Mm.
And that it should be educational briefings.
Yeah.
Educational briefings, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, done.
That we would then say, I think you should say, you've done two things. You've gotten one, the considerations you need to consider, but we may want to just give them some things they may want to consider.
Hmm.
Like historical background, ICANN resources for information.
Where would this go? Let me try to find a place to put it so then I can start capturing it. All right, how about here? All right, go ahead. So once again, historical what?
Historical background of issues.
Okay.
ICANN resources for information on issues.
Technology use and technology implement.
Use of technology, or you could just put communications and or collaboration tools.
Okay.
And then working group structure and operations or something, I don't know, or
okay.
Protocol or something.
Right.
And then you would say, when considering what educational briefings would be required, then you put in that, what are the costs, what are the objectives.
Got it. Okay.
And in that last section, Joe Scott, I have no concept about the words, the wordsmithing is going to have to be up to someone else, but I'm just thinking of an example, again, in the telco world where we were going down a pathway where we were developing policy and it was becoming very much a privacy issue in terms of the ability to track locations on mobile phones. And it was interesting to see the difference in the group's views and the way the debate was going before they had exposure to the negative side of people, in this case it was actual loss of life in a disaster situation where emergency services do need access to those types of tracking abilities. Just having, a briefing, being able to call for a briefing to explore other options, other perspectives can also freshen up and I guess give new lease of life to a forward-going discussion as opposed to a head-butting debate where you've got particular political or agendas that have become entrenched in a work group, sometimes bringing in an external briefing just to freshen up some thought processes can be a very useful tool.
Well, I guess you would then put another bullet to say that briefings shouldn't only be limited to upfront issues, but could also be
emerging.
Could be emerging issues that come
and
out.
And that allows the technology. So, for example, if someone goes, whoa, hang on, this might have real effects on stability and security, you can, you know, ask for someone from the ESSAC to come and tell you, is that the case or not?
So I think all you do is just say, you know, we've sort of focused on what you need to do to bring someone up to speed and get them started in a working group. We could have put a bullet in and say that educational briefings are not limited to just that.
Yeah.
They should also be considered in exploring issues if appropriate.
Yeah, emerging issues during the process, exactly. Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
You kind of grabbed that?
I grabbed it. I'm not sure I put it in the right place, but I'll move it to make a bullet out of it. But I've captured the idea that these educational briefings could either be upfront or the exploration of emerging issues.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see.
Stuff.
Well, we have another bullet on this title of this section 4.3 was briefings, subject matter experts, and translation/interpretation. And I've just noted that. Wait a second. Yeah.
And
okay.
Maybe you want to kind of like take the translation away from there because that's a little bit different than the other topics.
Okay.
Yeah. It really that. That almost is, you know, back where, you know, you use your tools. That's just a translation and interpretation is yet another part of your toolbox, as far as I'm concerned. If you're working in a multilingual environment, and that is an if, it would be, you know, something that actually could be defined in the charter, then you use tools which meet those needs. And in that case, it could be a human interpreter in a phone bridge, or it could be something technologically clever.
Okay, I slid it up. Well, I slid it up to 4.2.
Okay.
And retire. So it's briefings, subject matter experts. Okay. So we have a bullet there that says SMEs up front before recruiting. There will be information in the charter document that discusses whether the sponsoring organization wants to put SMEs into the working group, right? So that it'll get considered there first.
Hmm.
And then I guess the question is, if the working group thinks it needs a subject matter expert, like it might need an educational briefing, but somebody may be more semi-permanent on the team.
I thought that was sort of covered.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong saying that if you believe that you need a subject matter expert as part of your team, that you have, but wouldn't you need to go back to the sponsoring organization and ask that, or do we want to give them?
Well, can you just co-opt?
Can you just go out and ask somebody?
That's a great question, I think.
The ability to co-opt would be very useful if that needs to be.
What is that? When you say co-opt, you mean like
ask for them? So it's they're not necessarily a voting member, but they can be, in a meeting to answer questions.
All right. So what I can do here
an
again?
An ex officio role is, I guess.
Excuse me, it's Alexei Sazonov. Can I raise a small issue regarding translation?
Sure.
We're saying and we're meaning here that translation that needs to be done just from the, just to hear, to for people to hear what the, was said in English and to understand. Do we have any thoughts if the person cannot speak English to translate what he might deliver from himself?
Well, all I was thinking we would do in section 4.2 in the guidebook would be to remind the working group that it should consider what translation and interpretation needs and facilities it requires based on the composition of the team.
Okay.
We wouldn't prescribe anything, but, you know, even in our group, if you or someone else popped up and said, you know, I'm having a lot of trouble understanding what's going on with the discussion, then the team would have to try to figure out how to deal with that.
Okay. Well, I'm fine with the discussion. I'm just saying, in case there is a worthy expert from the country and he wants to be heard, not just he wants to hear what is just discussed.
Yeah, I think that if a non-English speaking person wanted to be heard, then it would. That's where that comes into communications. You need to make arrangements for them to be able to communicate.
Well, at least something like that.
Yeah. And for example, in the ALAC, our regions, at least three of our regions, work in at least two languages all the time. And all of my ALAC calls are in French, Spanish, and English with real-time, real live interpreters working over the phone bridges. So we have an English channel, a French channel, and a Spanish channel. And all our documents go out in all those languages. And the Adobe rooms write in those languages. So that's because it meets the makeup and nature of that group.
Yeah, I think just noting something like that up with the communications will be...
Yeah, because it's just in a matter of choose your tools.
Yeah, I just want to us to be aware of that. This is it.
Thank you.
Okay, I think I've captured that.
Yeah. And I'd love it to, you know, eventually us all be working in the six UN languages. But we're not there yet.
All right. So this...
All right, so, you know, as I looked at it, I wonder if... because I'm going to end up... Education briefings, we've made a few points about them, right? You have to identify the needs, and you have to... I wonder if I couldn't just... the same thing would be true of SMEs, right? It's all the same points.
Mm.
Yes.
And so it seems doesn't seem... economical here to repeat all of that same stuff. So educational briefings or SMEs, I think I can use.
Yes, the same bullet.
Yeah, it's all the same stuff, right? I'm going to say identify the need and
so all
so
you would do is you would put educational briefings as your first one, SMEs as your second one, and the considerations for doing one or the other as your third bullet. And just make the considerations applicable to both.
Right. Okay, I'll fiddle with it.
Does that make sense?
Right. So I'm gonna clobber everything that's underneath SMEs there.
Mm-hmm.
All that's gonna be just that's all repetitive.
Okay.
Now, Avery's note: the GNSO has to meet.
Well, has to do with the interpretation translation.
Oh, it certainly does. Now, should I make a note up there under the translate?
Oh, I think that needs to go up with it.
What is it that we're saying here?
Well,
he's basically saying that at this point, the language that is used by the GNSO, the preferred language, is English. It seems to me that's what you're saying. Cheryl, you're more...
Yeah, and as I read it, she says, at the moment, the GNSO... works in English. If the GNSO extends beyond English, she would think it should be supporting the six UN languages. Anything else would risk discrimination. I couldn't agree with her more.
Okay. I'll add... Um, Well, I'm just wondering, though, if a group, if a working group had, say, six or eight people who spoke English or were fluent in English and one who was not, and that language happened to be Spanish, they wouldn't need translation interpretation in all the UN languages, would they? If the one person who spoke Spanish just needed...
Yeah, I think Aubrey's point is I think what each working group's going to have to make its decision based on what its needs and requirements are.
Yep.
I think noting that today they work primarily in English, however, you should have the flexibility to meet the needs of the working group with regards to a translation.
Okay, yeah, I don't think we need to say anything about the six UN languages in this particular guidebook.
Not in this document, but it is something that the GNSO may have to grapple with later.
Okay. I think you're right.
All right, good.
What'll happen is that'll just, once they make that determination, it'll just, again, it'll be self-evident.
Right. Okay.
Because I'm already finding it challenging being limited to working in three languages.
All right. 4.4?
Yes, sir.
Staff support. We want staff to do everything, period. Let's move on.
I staff support is a good idea.
Right, yeah. And just like all the other things that ended up in this early outline, some of this stuff just came from brainstorming activities on the part of myself and kind of our colleagues. I think the charter document is going to have something in it that says, to the extent that the sponsor identifies the need for staff support, it will be provided for. So the working group may already have a staff or one or two or more staff people assigned, in which case there's not much more for the working group to do unless it thinks it needs additional staff support, right?
You need to say that it should be handled in the charter. If it's handled in the charter, it needs to be evaluated to see if it's, the working group believes it is sufficient. In the event it isn't handled, that is something that needs to be handled in up front.
Right. Or it might be that the staff person assigned is incompetent and needs to be replaced.
You need to be able to
herewith.
Actually, that really is important because I've worked with some challenging staff input here in the telco industry in Australia, to the point where you wonder whether or not the work group is little more than lip service.
Right. We can put I was being half facetious there, but I think that's probably not a bad thing to stick in there, right?
Yeah.
What a
definition of the role.
Mm. Well, no, I was thinking about, what if the working group doesn't think its staff support is helping?
Yeah.
You know, what can they do?
And I think that, one of the early things is the working group and the staff need to come to an understanding about what level of support staff is going to provide the working group. Early on.
Yeah, can I suggest something? Obviously one way of trying to address that was, I guess, this the paragraphs written here and the staff support, where basically the all these issues of estimation phases and budget and stuff like this will be stuff that the working group or maybe the chair of the working group or some small group of the working group would think about and liaise with the staff, whereas the other way of doing it would be the staff or the chartering organization working together with the staff has already pre-decided what is the support you're going to get. Oh, you're going to get one person for X months, something. But the worry there is that the chartering group may not actually think in detail about what the working group has to do to figure out exactly how much resources and so on. So some rough stab would have been made, And even the chartering group may not really know exactly how much it would be, except based on previous experience, you know, roughly what it might require. It's only the working group or the chair of the working group sitting down would probably realize exactly how much might be needed early on. So perhaps the different ways of solving this, but maybe one way is, as J. Scott Evans says, maybe one thing should be very early on, maybe a pre-meeting even with the chair and a couple of people who are already on the committee, sit down and have a single session, essentially, a pre-session or the first session of the working group, be a session dedicated partly to figuring out, talking to staff and figuring out that everybody's on the same page in terms of what they're getting in terms of staff support and what could be needed. That makes sense? I mean, that would hash out the requirement for thinking through very carefully because from the part of the working group, because at the time where they sit down, they'll talk to the staff and say, okay, staffs, we know from the charter group that the staff has been assigned for this, and this. Well, we thought about it in the 20, 30 minutes when we talk, we'll come to some agreement about how we can use that resource.
It also has ramifications if you're looking at extensions to timelines and shifting milestones, because it's quite possible, picking up on the scalability discussions, re-staff commitment that were going on earlier in today's call, that if one or more work groups start, for very good reasons, extending their operational time, that's going to have some real effects on staff resourcing. So I think it's like all other tools and resources. You also need to look at, are you going to have, you may even have to switch who your staff support is, not through any complaint or competency issue, but because that person is being already allocated to another equally demanding task and someone else will be giving whatever level of staff support is deemed appropriate.
Right. Well, I think I've got the general idea here, right? I think J. Scott kind of summarized it on the beginning. The question is, first of all, the idea, it should be handled in the charter. Right? However, if there is some specific need that is not handled, then the working group should determine what specific skill sets it needs and estimate how much of that they think they need and then ask permission to get it, right?
Yeah. But on top of that, even, I mean, the point that I'm trying to point out is if everybody knew, at least the core group who's running the working group and the chair and a couple of others, fully understand, it's not so much what resources that they get in. If they understand this is the amount of resource you're going to get, this is the amount of what work we need, and then they could at least figure out how to work within those constraints, right? I mean, at least at the outset before getting started, right? I mean, this is the amount of resource you've gotten. Well, you know, this is how we're going to work within it. At least you know what you're getting before, you know, up front knowing who's going to be taking minutes or whatever, right, so that we can all perform within the constraints we've got. I think it's more understanding what you're getting and working within that than actually demanding what you get, what you want or anything. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, these would be requests I would gather, right?
I mean, I think that it's an assessment.
Yeah.
Right. That's
if you've been given anything, what you've been given, how operating within that will work in the event you identify that there are any shortcomings, or that's probably not a good word, but, you know, you may need additional resources, if those are identified and communicated to the sponsoring organization so that those issues can be worked through and, you know, additional staff can be assigned if appropriate.
Right. Okay, I think I can finish wordsmithing. There's some stuff material in here like budget revisions. I think I just would take that out.
I don't see how that, you know, I don't think that really comes into play.
Yeah, I don't either. And there's one in here called phases should define extra mandates for initial startup and for. I think that's probably too much detail.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably just sufficient to say. What we already talked about, right? Determine what you need, and we can give some examples there, right? I've included, like, maybe there's some specific computer expertise or secretariat duties or something like that.
Or that might be where your bilingual person could be really handy.
Yeah, the translation/interpretation is there. staff person. And then the next two bullets could probably just be collapsed. The idea is to try to give some estimation to, so that the sponsoring organization will know what you're asking for, and then they'll check availability and see if it can be done. If it can, it can, and if it can't, it can't, right?
Yep.
All right. Let's look at Avery's note real quick. Okay, she's asking if this isn't a staff item, and
I think it has to be collaborative.
That's right. I think it is a staff item to some extent, but you know, the working group needs to understand what they're getting so they can fit within it.
Okay, so
and
I'll just
what
I'll,
asking for more does, yeah.
I'll just clobber her note then, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we've covered it. All right, that finishes section 4. How about that?
Woohoo!
It's 10 minutes to noon.
Not where I am, darling.
No, sorry about that. No. How callous of me not to. I was just there in your lovely part of the world 14 hours later. it's 10 minutes to end of 2 hours.
How
about
that?
Do you want to try to jump into 5 or.
Yes.
Okay, let's do it. Products and outputs. All right, so we have two notes before we even get to 5.1, which was to review response timeframes. Products and outputs. All right, so this section was generally going to talk about what the working group team produces, delivers.
Some of those first two comments, I sort of thought to some extent we were addressing some of these issues earlier on when we were looking at the recording, and I didn't mean literally recording in MP3 format, but that's inclusive of it, the records of meetings, so meeting summaries and attendance and things I thought would have been dealt with. Rather than as a product and an output, but as an ongoing activity.
Yeah, we certainly did capture that. Whether we want to make some reference to the fact that I don't really know. You guys that have all the experience with working groups, does the chair or the secretariat of the working group frequently produce like a monthly summary report that goes to the sponsoring organization that says something like, our attendance records and voting outcomes and stuff like that. Well, it won't be voting, right? It's consensus outcomes anyway.
In answer to your question, from my experience in my spaces, AEDA board, the chair of the work of our policy work groups comes to every second, possibly not every meeting, but every second meeting, board meeting, either comes or phones in and does a, here's where we're up to, here's our milestones, this is going well, we might need more time on this, and it's just, we never get a who's been there, we'll know if there's issues coming up, but we don't get the so detailed amount. That said, because everything's archived and accessible, I can find that out at any time.
Okay.
It doesn't need to be part of an output report.
Okay. What about Aubrey's note? What does she say here? Collecting state, as many different ones can be found, seems a good idea.
Since I put up the first comment on the suggest that, Subaya here, in addition to time frame and explicitly identifying product results, my take is that her view is that knowing some of that detail would tell you how a group functioned, basically. You know, where you're basically capturing details at various points, this point being at the end in terms of, the various attendances and along the way, how different things when they were voted on, you know, would give you an idea of how the group functioned. And I think that's my take is that's what she's saying. And for me personally, because I've monitored a few working groups and a few committees' progress in ICANN over the years, and the ones that where I can't actually from the outside take a look at, you know, all the archives and see how it happened and everything. What I found useful in the cases where it's been very, where it's been done, there's been a couple of cases that I know is done very thoroughly, where at the end of it, you just go, you take a look, you can see who was in the committee, what is it, how did people participate, and on the issues they took votes or whatever on, in this case, you know, consensus, whatever, you know, on the different issues and the viewpoints, you can just look at all the different things that they voted on or thought about, and then whether there was a, you know, if there was a minority view, then what the minority views are, all in a single page, and or two or three pages, and it's very clear. And it was done a few times, and it's in those times it was very helpful. You just went there and you knew exactly what happened. For example, in I think now in the registry constituency, they're quite transparent about how they make decisions. When you see a position paper by the registry constituency, you go to it, you see what they discussed, what their position is, but at the very bottom there's a page or two that says exactly who their membership is, how they kind of decided what the voting patterns were, very clear. So then it really is helpful seeing that as well as what's on top. You know,
but when you're trying to build consensus, I would have thought that in a final report or output, much of those metrics would be captured, but in a transparency system, a system where things are recorded, archived, and accessible, the extent of the details, the actual patterns of if there is a vote, because it may all be done by consensus, how that vote went, where discussions resulted in minority views being recorded, and indeed the attendance at each of the meetings should be accessible.
Yes, but I think in my experience in the past, if it's not...
If we're trying to design something that will be, not that was.
Well, yeah,
I mean,
right.
I think it's here that what we're trying to say is, you know, what is the group responsible for at a minimum level?
Mm.
And one is we've already decided that they're going to need to have routine meeting summaries with action items. We've already decided that they need to have a historical archive of work in progress. We've already decided, and then that includes mailing lists,
mm-hmm.
three recordings, wiki drafts, you know, those things. I think that they need to have, if required, periodic reports to the sponsoring organization. It may not be required, or it may be required.
Mm.
You know, and then I think then we can pick up with this, you know, they do need to select a chair, they do need to look at the charter, they do need to collaborate, if required, collaborate with the sponsoring organization on the charter. They do need to develop a work plan.
Yeah.
You know, they do need to identify information. I don't know that identify information needed is necessarily an output.
Yeah, I agree.
They need to develop the work plan. They need to execute the work plan. They need to compile the working group report. And they need to do a working group assessment.
Yeah, I'm having a little difficulty here just with the basic structure of this section. I'm unclear in my own mind about review response timeframes, and then there's a product list, a 5-2, and then a closure. I think the original idea was to break the product and outputs into, like, beginning, middle, and end or something like that.
With milestones and where things have to be done by.
Well, or it's like, let's do this. We don't have much time left. Let me just get a sense from you guys. Let's look at the stuff under 5.2, the bullets that start with public comment. And let's do the same thing Jay Scott just did on the first group. and just let's see if we like what Aubrey said. She liked the list. AD, good list, right? Mm-hmm. Let's see what we think about it. And then let's do the same thing with 5-3. There's only five bullets there.
Yes.
And then leave it. Then turn it back over to me, and I'll try to synthesize all this stuff into one section that makes sense. Because I think there's some redundancy between these bullets.
Yep.
And I'm not clear in my own mind about review response, time frames, products. I think this can be consolidated somehow, as long as we capture all the right ideas.
Yeah.
I think we can retitle. I'm not married to any of these section titles either.
Yeah, and by the way, I did capture your three, Jay Scott, that you just ticked off, meeting summaries, historical archives, periodic reports, and I'll try to fit that in where it belongs. But what do we think about Thomas's public comment from notification of commencement of PDP? Well, it might not be a PDP, right?
Well, you know, again, I don't know if that's a working group problem. That looks to me like that's an ICANN.
It's high level. Yeah.
I mean, I certainly don't want to make the working group responsible for the public comment.
Yeah, that's normally a staff function, right, isn't it?
That's just a huge bailiwick. First of all, it's you know, that just needs to be, that's part of the ICANN process.
Mm-hmm.
That's ICANN's responsibility. That is not the working group's responsibility.
Okay.
I don't know how other people feel, but certainly that's too much to try to manage. I mean, you just have to assume, given we're transparent and that all work product, once it's gone up to the council, is put out for public comment, that's handled by council and staff.
Okay. How about the next one?
That's part of assimilating a final report.
Yeah.
You're going to have to have a way to take that in and archive that.
Okay, so let me add a note, assimilate into final report.
And I would put stakeholder/constituency group statements.
I agree.
Because right now those are so ambiguous, they can be one and the same, they can be different, but I don't think we should break them out where they look like they're different.
Okay, yeah. All right, good. Well, he has constituency statements next.
Yeah, I would just put those all together.
All right.
Because some groups may want to do constituency statements. Some groups may want to do stakeholders. But what I don't want the people thinking is they have to have two.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yes.
Statements of advisors or consultants.
I think that's fine.
Advisors, consultants, statements of qualifications and experience. Is that an output?
I don't think that's an output. I think those and the conflict of interest are the sorts of things, just like the work group members, that should all be publicly available up front as you're appointed.
Yeah, and those will be charter requirements, won't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I'll take those out. Independent research, new or historical?
Well, certainly if there's any independent research that the group does, they're going to be responsible for making sure that it's archived and inaccessible.
Mm.
So I would put that on their back.
And there has been some policy work group activities which have done some baseline had baseline studies on things that have been incredibly useful for future work to develop from. And I think as long as they don't just do it and keep it hidden in the tiny report section of the one meeting it goes to, that does need to be flagged as something important.
Okay. Surveys, preliminary recommendations, positions, same thing, right?
Yeah.
Archived, accessible.
And minority reports, the same thing. Draft initial report, same thing.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. And then real quick on 5-3 closure. Initial report.
7 minutes over the hour, so really you've got another 7 minutes. It's all right.
Well, I have another call. I'm supposed to be.
Well, here's what I would say: initial report, fine. Public comment, get rid of it.
That's got it.
Final report, chair's report, and assessment of working group are fine.
And just a point regarding 5.2, all those items about various people's statements, you know, advisor, consultant statements, constituency statements, stakeholder group statements. I guess these all will just be linked at the end of the final report, right? I mean, basically, the references or something, you'll just say these are the places where these things are at, correct? That's how it'll be taken care of.
If you use a collaborative tool where they're archived, then you just list to those archive links, or the mailing list link, or the whatever.
Yeah, but that's not this. The product is for public consumption, right? I mean, yeah, I agree, but it's just that this product is what somebody who's not been in the committee at all, if it's an observer of ICANN, wants to be able to go to in a single document, see the summaries of everything plus links to whatever, right?
Yeah, links to the gory details.
Correct. Okay. Yeah.
All right, Ken. Do you have enough to sort of
yep
question this out
yep.
and.
Yeah, I was just talking to Liz earlier this morning, and what I'm going to try to do is to grab a significant amount of my July time to devote to the working group team and to the drafting of both the charter and this operating model. Now that we have pretty much completed outlines, and so we should start moving into that step, and I think that's going to actually work. Just based on where we are with the restructuring effort and all that, I think I'm going to have some time in July to really work on this. So the ball is going to, I mean, the work task next is going to fall over to staff for a while.
Okay. What I would like to do is, can we do a doodle to have a call in 2 weeks?
Sure.
And just do that whole week for the 2 weeks and pick, I guess, this. All right.
Right. I'm sorry. So we want to do a doodle in 2 weeks and like our normal Wednesday time?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, I'll try to get that set up.
All right.
And we'll do that for 2 weeks from this
Wednesday.
This week, yeah, right. And then I'll try to get some stuff done so that we have something to talk about.
That's going to be the 23rd for everybody who sort of has trying to think about their calendar. That'll be July 23rd.
Okay. Great.
All right.
Well, listen, thanks, everybody. That was great. I had no clue we would get through it. We did. 2 hours was right, Jay Scott.
All right.
Nice
great
guess.
Time, and let's keep it up, okay?
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Okay,
bye. Bye.